Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
I'm going to read one verse this morning, text 33 from chapter 26. Of Canto 3, Fundamental Principles of Material Nature. And this would be like attending a science class. A little better. This is Lord Kapila Dev speaking to Devahuti. She's asked a question in a whole series of questions and answers, a question that says, can you please describe how the Supreme Lord and His energies act as causal influences for the unmanifest and manifest stages of creation? The personality of Godhead is the cause of all causes, and one of the effects from Him is His not the energies, because the energies are simultaneously inseparable from Him and appear to be acting separately, but how they mix with one and another. Those effects then become causes of other effects. So the causal, Krishna is the original cause, and other factors are also causes. Just like we can say Krishna is the supreme controller, but we can also say we're little controllers. Very little. Everyone is in control of something. But ultimately, that something that we're in control of is dependent upon a supreme controller, so we're controlled. The controllers are controlled. So ultimately, Krishna is in control. Similarly, He's the original cause, and we have some causal... I can reach out and pick up my eyeglasses. Ta-da! So we can do some things. We can cause something to happen, apparently. But Krishna advises in Bhagavad Gita, don't think of yourself as the cause of an action, or the cause of the result of the action, or the inducing others to act, because that's all being carried out by material nature. But we have a role to play in things. There, I just did it again. I picked up my glasses. So we have a role to play, but it's one of many factors that are causal factors depending upon the supreme cause. Because without the sanction of the Supreme Lord, I can't pick up my glasses. The glasses might not exist, or my mobility of my hand might not exist, and so on. So we're dependent factors of the supreme independent factor. So there are causal relationships, just as when Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, all this is carried out by my material energy, so that's a cause. Prakriti is a cause, but Prakriti doesn't move on its own. Matter doesn't move on its own. Matter moves by touch of spirit. But yet Krishna says, this is all being carried out by material nature. The whole show being carried out by material nature. The sun's rising and setting, and the seasons changing, and the birds flying south for the winter, and the leaves falling off the trees, and, you know, and everything that we do, you know, the paving of the roads and clearing of the roads when the snow comes. It's all being carried out by a material nature, but we have a role to play. And one, the Krishna conscious role is recognize who is the master, who is the controller, and then serve accordingly. Or we have another choice: be covered by the illusory potency that helps us to think, enables us to think we're the cause. So in describing how the Lord and his energies act as causal factors for both the unmanifest and the manifest state, he gets right into the subject matter and starts describing basically the devolving of creation by cause and effect, the Supreme Lord being the original cause, and then other factors being the effects, which then in turn become causes of another effect, and so on. Then you have creation. At least you have the preliminary creation, what happens before Lord Brahma appears. Because then Lord Brahma appears and he takes these principles, the elements, and starts mixing them to get a universe and species of life and all kinds of nice material things, material creation. So in the devolving stage, the glance of the Supreme Lord agitating the unmanifest pradhan, undifferentiated total material substance, and with that agitation then things start to devolve from a unmanifest. I'm using the word devolve specifically because it's not evolution. It's already there, and from subtle to more gross, to more gross, to more gross, to more gross, to more gross. The stages of elements. The first element to appear is our dear friend, false ego. And then false ego mixes with that previously dormant modes of nature, and goodness, passion, and ignorance successively manifest the mind, intelligence, and panchabhuta, the five gross elements. And with with the five gross elements come another three sets of five. Five knowledge-acquiring senses, five working senses, and five objects of the senses. Three times five is how many? 15. Is she right? 15. Plus the five gross elements. 15 plus five is 20. And then we already had mind, intelligence, and false ego. So that's 23. We're almost there. Just 24 elements. He already said what the 24 elements are. Then he said there's a 25th, which is time. That's a long discussion. Time is a wonderful subject. Time is not material, but it appears to be material. So it's got its own category. And time is necessary for this devolving to take place. So just go back a couple verses. Mm-hmm. there's a description, I won't go into it, the very nice description of material intelligence, which is the result of false ego mixing with passion, doubt, misapprehension, correct apprehension, memory, and sleep, as determined by their different functions, are said to be the distinct characteristics of intelligence. Egoism in the mode of passion produces two kinds of senses. The senses for acquiring knowledge and the senses of action. Just leave it. And the senses of action. The senses of action depend on the vital energy, and the senses for acquiring knowledge depend on intelligence. So I'm not going to review that verse again because it's lengthy and you can go listen to what it says. But now is egoism and ignorance. The first element, there's the five gross, but the first of the five gross is the most subtle. So it's the most subtle of the five gross elements. Ether. Along with ether, it's not he has companions. He doesn't come alone. He comes with his friends. With ether comes the sense object sound. And with sound and ether come the indriya, the sense organ for hearing. But even before you get ears, because Brahma makes the ears, but before there's ears, there's the sense of hearing, the power of hearing. You got that one? Here's how it goes. I'll do it again. It's like a machine part. I've got legs, but supposing the legs get amputated and they don't have legs. Can I still get around? Yes, you just get a wheelchair or some other means of getting around, maybe one of those fake legs, and then I can get around. So the getting around is because of the power of locomotion, not just because of the legs. The sense power is there before the machine part. And you break the machine part. If the ear becomes damaged, I don't know if medical technology has got it together to put another machine part in. But that's, the machine part isn't the capacity itself. It's an instrument through which one can use the power. And because we have the power by technology, we can do different things to enhance the capacity to see, because the power to see, there's this God-given in the machine part, the eye, but then I can magnify something that's far away and something that's very near, and you can use other machine parts to make that capacity. It's the capacity to see that's being described. Or not, it's not see, here it's sound, the sense of hearing. And then later, the body. Sense of hearing, that which is heard, which is sound, and the medium that carries sound, ether. Boom, boom, boom. Nice purport. Now, this morning's purport, the verse and purport. Text 33. Persons who are learned and who have true knowledge define sound. So now he's going more deeply into one of the three things that are sky, sound, in the sense of hearing. Now he's going more deeply into sound. What's sound? What is it from a Sankhya perspective? They have defined sound as that which conveys the idea of an object, comma, indicates the presence of a speaker, screened from our view, and, the third thing, constitutes the subtle form of ether. I told you it'd be like a science class. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is very clear herein that as soon as we speak of hearing, there must be a speaker. Without a speaker, there's no question of hearing. Forwards and backwards. Sound indicates there's a speaker. Without a speaker, there's no hearing. Therefore, the Vedic knowledge, which is known as Shruti, or that which is received by hearing, is also called Apaurusheya. Apaurusheya means, quote, not spoken by any person materially created, unquote. It is stated in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Tene Brahma Hrida. The sound of Brahman or Veda was first impregnated into the heart of Brahma, the original learned man, Adi Kaviye. How did he become learned? Whenever there is learning, there must be a speaker and the process of hearing. But Brahma was the first created being. So who spoke to him? Good question. He's the first created being. Who spoke to him? You understand the question? Okay. Just being happy. Whenever there is learning, there must be a speaker and the process of hearing. So, no one was there. Who was the spiritual master to give knowledge? He was the only living creature, therefore Vedic knowledge was imparted within his heart by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seated within everyone as Paramatma. Vedic knowledge is understood to be spoken by the Supreme Lord, and therefore it is free from the defects of material understanding. Material understanding is defective. I like when Prabhupada does that. Backwards and forwards. If we hear something from a conditioned soul, it is full of defects. That's three times. All material and mundane information is tainted by illusion, error, cheating, and imperfection of the senses, the four defects of the conditioned souls. Because Vedic knowledge was imparted by the Supreme Lord, who is transcendental to material creation. It is perfect. That's the Apaurusheya word. We receive that Vedic knowledge from Brahma in disciplic succession. If we receive that Vedic knowledge from Brahma in disciplic succession, then we receive perfect knowledge. What a beautiful paragraph. Okay. And that's just one of the three things, what he's done in the purport. Because there's three paragraphs in this purport. There's three things that Kapila Dev says that sound is, or what sound does. Sound indicates a speaker. That's the, so it's one of the three. Now he's going to go to the first one, because he did the second one first. That which conveys the idea of an object. Sound is that which conveys the idea of an object. Paragraph. Every word we hear has a meaning behind it. And he explains, as soon as we hear the word water, there is a substance, water, behind the word. Similarly, as soon as we hear the word God, there is a meaning to it. We receive that meaning and explanation of God from God himself. Then it is perfect. But if we speculate about the meaning of God, it is imperfect. Bhagavad Gita, which is the science of God, is spoken by the personality of Godhead himself. This is perfect knowledge. Mental speculators, or so-called philosophers, who are researching what is actually God, will never understand the nature of God. The science of God has to be understood in the cyclic succession from Brahma, who was first instructed about knowledge of God by God himself. We can understand the knowledge of God by hearing Bhagavad Gita from a person authorized in the disciplic succession. So he's combined these two. The sound conveys the idea of an object. It's not saying sound conveys the object. He's not saying that sound is absolute. And whether absolute sound is absolute. So the sound of Krishna's name conveys Krishna. It is Krishna. The sound of something material, he gives the example water, it conveys the idea of water behind the word, the sound, there's the object. So the sound conveys the idea of the object. Where do ideas reside or take shape? In the mind. So before there's sound, there's mind. And that sequence, it's chronological. False ego mixing with the mode of goodness, the mind is produced. So now, before there's creation, there's sound, there's the possibility of having an idea about something to be able to make a sound about that something. There's the idea that comes before the sound, that comes before the object. Plato had studied this in freshman philosophy class, college. The realm of the absolutes, it goes something like this. Here's a chair, and he uses the example of a chair. Before there's a chair, there's an idea of a chair. Somebody thought about, hey, let's get a chair. And they went out and got a college degree so they could design a chair. And then they took their chair design to the, you know, to their boss and said, here's a nice chair design. And so they made the chair. So before there was the chair was the idea of the chair. Then he asks the question, where did the idea of the chair come from? And he reasons, this is Plato, by use of logic and reason, there are three ways of knowing things. sense perception, logic and reason, and scripture. So he doesn't go to scripture, he just goes to logic and reason and philosophizes, speculates. There must be this realm of absolutes where absolute chairs exist. That's where the idea of a chair came from, and that's where this chair came from. It came from the idea of a chair, which came from the realm of the absolutes. It's a nice argument. So, at least, you know, before something that's very similar, the reason for making the reference is the idea of a thing exists before the sound, or at least the capacity to have an idea. The minds exist before sound exists. And sound conveys the idea of something. But after that sound conveying the idea of something, here's what happens. Downstream, this is just sound over here, but from sound is going to come other elements. How's it go? Sound, air, fire, water, earth. So within earth, there's sound. So the sound wiggles over here, and boom, the configuration of matter over in the earth side looks like this one. Because sound is within the element of earth, right? You wiggle it over here, and it wiggles over here. And what makes this one wiggle over here? The idea. The mind. Had an idea. Hey, let's have a chair. And then where did that come from? Matter doesn't move without the touch of spirit. And the capacity of the individual soul is dependent upon the Supreme Soul. So he's the cause of all causes. He doesn't have to do anything. He just... The stage is set, and then Lord Brahma comes and, you know, into the sandbox and makes a sandcastle. And then people come in and say, hey, look at this, we can live in the sandcastle. And they hang out for a while, and then they go. It's called life. And then the whole thing closes down. There's there's one more paragraph. I'll read the one more paragraph. This is now, I'll read the sentence, the translation. Persons who are learned and who have true knowledge define sound as that which conveys the idea of an object. It indicates the presence of a speaker screened from our view, and it constitutes the subtle form of ether. What's that mean? Here's the purport paragraph. When we speak of seeing, there must be form. By our sense perception, the beginning experience is the sky. Sky is the beginning of form. And from the sky, other forms emanate. The object of knowledge and sense perception begin, therefore, from the sky. That's all he says. The subtle form of ether. Not the subtle form of an object, it's the subtle form of ether. So what's ether? Ether is sky. And within sky, there's sound. Or say it the other way. Sound is carried by ether. Prabhupada gives this example. Sitting on the Vyasa-san, claps his hands and goes... What's that? There's air, and you just compressed air. So it makes a sound. Supposing you don't have two hands, you just have the sky. Here comes here comes a warm air front or a cold air front comes rushing and makes a big sound called thunder. That's what thunder is. It's air rushing. Or a sonic boom when the plane goes faster than the speed of sound. I don't know technically how it makes a big boom, but it makes a big boom. It's just air, movements of air. And air is within sky. So what's within sky? Sound. And so sound moves because of the movements of air. That's the movements of air. And what's the movements of sky? So, the answer to that question, Sariputta has put together a little video to explain parapsychology. What scientist would be interested in parapsychology? That's like garbage, right? If you're a scientist, parapsychology is rubbish. He, Sariputta, spent some time studying the works of two tenured professors at Princeton University in the field of statistics, because Sariputta had his PhD in mathematics, so he was interested in statistics. So they have a statistics department at Princeton University. And two people who very recently retired, and everyone celebrated saying, these guys were quacks, they shouldn't have anything to do with Princeton. How'd he ever get in here anyways? In the statistics department, they were studying parapsychology. They would set up experiments that predictably should be 50-50 outcome, like flip the coin, heads, tails, and you do it some number of times and it's 50-50. So they would set up experiments where the willpower, the mind of the performer of the experiment, would determine not 50-50, but this way or that way, depending upon how they willed the outcome of the event. One experiment that Sariputta described was they set up pinball games. So there's a tray, goes like this, and a ball would come up from the top, come out of the hole at the top, and then hit a peg. And statistically, 50% would go this way, 50% would go that way. And then when it hit and went down, if it went that way, it would hit another peg, and 50% would go this way or that way, and then another peg, set a series of pegs. So you would have an array that would be largely in the middle, equally distributed left and right, and then diminishing going over to either side, and the same way going the other direction. So they had the experimenter will more this way or more that way. But the experimenter didn't tell anybody, they just willed it. And then they, you know, pressed the button or pulled the lever or whatever they had to do, so the ball would come down and boom, 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 boom. And they found that more this way or more that way, depending upon the will or willing of the experimenter. That's mind influencing matter. That's what parapsychology is. Then they did another experiment related to that one, was they sent the experimenter away, and they had the experimenter write on a piece of paper what they willed. And then they had somebody else that was doing the experiment that was not to will it one way or the other and would still come out according to the will of the experimenter. In short, mind influences matter. That's parapsychology. And their whole career in the statistics department at Princeton University was studying parapsychology. And then they retired, everybody celebrated. But how it works because it just to be very clear about it, from mechanistic science point of view, that can't happen. Because the reason it can't happen is there's only one thing. There's matter, and there's the laws that govern matter, and there's not something else. There's no such thing as mind. It doesn't exist. Tell somebody that's distressed, you don't have a mind, so don't worry about it. They'll say, no, it's just matter in a certain configuration due to the laws of nature. That's all it is. So, later on, I think it's in this chapter, there is some discussion about something that both Sataputta and Rasaraj have focused in on, where Prabhupada writes in a purport, great scientific experiments can be done to indicate how mind influences matter. So Sataputta created a video, and it's in my computer, but this is my computer screen right here. And he shows random events, molecules of gas just bouncing against one another. Random events. Some of the molecules of gas are blue, some of them are red. And they just continue random. Then he stops the screen and says, however, by the right, I don't know the exact language, the right perturbing of the angle of how the whole thing is set into motion and amplifying it over a period of time, you can get the outcome of all the red little balls or molecules over here, the blue ones over there. And it's divided instead of random, instead of just a mix. It depends upon the initial disturbance and proper amplification. And he does it several times to show what happens. Random, and then this set over here and that set over there. And he shows, here's a processor, he used some term, some processor that can then, by the same principle, by the right initial disturbance over here and the proper amplification, can create letters. He shows an A and then an Om. And the purpose of all of that is to say the right disturbance over here, that's the mind, can create configurations of matter through the element of ether. The mind, supposing the mind thinks a happy thought, every now and then we think a happy thought. So the mind thinks a happy thought, and that influences matter. And the mind thinks a stressful thought, and that influences matter. Hey, health practitioners, isn't it true that happy thoughts make better health and unhappy thoughts make debilitated health? There's parapsychology. The mind influences matter. And that's just to show the cause and effect of things. Now, supposing your thoughts are with Krishna, what happens? The configuration of matter becomes most suited for service to Krishna. And the necessity of being involved with matter also dissolves. You become liberated from the other effect that goes this way, how matter conditions the soul and contaminates consciousness. The whole purpose of all of this, one of the purposes of all, there's several purposes. One is to identify the root of all existence, and then to water the root. So here's existence, and we get caught up in existence and forget the root. But the root is Krishna. And so, bring the mind to Krishna. So this is Sankhya, it's how it works. Suppose you don't know how it works, does it still work? It still works. Bring the mind to Krishna. But there's a science to it. And you bring the mind to some dark thought and you have dark events in matter. You bring the mind to some light thoughts, you get some light events. You bring the mind to Krishna, you get transcendental events. How does it work? Subtle to gross, cause and effect. So something wiggles here. Because it's embedded in the gross, it also wiggles the gross. I remember as a small boy growing up and trying to understand how sound travels through water, because I spent a lot of time swimming. And you take two rocks and go, you can't move them as fast as you can in the air, but it goes like this, and a sound comes. How's that? Because there's air, or the effects of air and sky within the grosser element of water. Sound is carried in ether, but ether, sky, is in water. Say it the other way around. Water is within ether. Everything is within the vastness of the sky. There's the vastness of sky. And then there's air moving around, and there's water moving around, and there's fire moving around, and there's earth moving around, but it's all within ether. And so sound, which is the subtle form of ether, is very important. What sounds you make and what sounds you hear, it's very important. And therefore, hearing from the right source is very important. Not just the capacity of the mind to speculate, it's the sound, spiritual sound vibration that aligns the mind properly, and then therefore aligns everything else properly. And even we can be living in this temporary creation with the five gross elements and the three subtle elements and the whole production. If consciousness is directed towards Krishna, it becomes Vaikuntha. Really? Tell me about it. I'm experiencing pain and suffering and birth death disease in old age, and my knee hurts, so I have to sit in a chair, and tell me it's Vaikuntha. But it's a question of consciousness, because matter undergoes its transformations. But if one's consciousness is with Krishna, then the temporary nature of that is clearly understood, and with that, detachment from the temporary configuration of matter, because of the attachment to Krishna. And that's something that Kapila Dev has described to Devahuti in the previous chapter. As there is attachment to matter, that attachment simply needs to be transferred to spirit. Specifically, he's speaking in that chapter of sadhu sangha. And because through sadhu sangha we become attached to Krishna. So we become attached to Krishna. And this, the configurations of matter they'll do whatever they're going to do. It's the age of Kali, so it's going to be age of Kali stuff. And we can, by Krishna consciousness, to some degree influence that. By Krishna consciousness, to some degree influence at least the life around us of not quarreling and manda samanda yo, manda bhagya, yupadrita. One can be one's memory can become stronger, one's compassion can become stronger, and you become less of a victim of the age of Kali and more Krishna conscious. And the helping hand of Krishna carrying you to Him. Okay, enough for a science class this morning. Any questions or comments? Yeah?
I have just curiosity question, Maharaj, like, what makes that will, you know, the variation in the strong, and some person will is not so strong, some person will is, you know, strong like that.
What do you think the answer is?
Very strong hearing.
Well, yeah. Yeah. It's part of it has to do with the endowments that someone has something to do with our free will choices previously made. And with what you have, the free will choices that you're now about to make. The hearing is how to strengthen it. Strengthen determination and focus and so forth. And submission. Those three things we find in fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. But one person's efforts, they're zoom, zoom, zoom. The other person's efforts, they're seemingly going nowhere. Because in one person's efforts and their previous free will choices have been aligned in such a way that they now have, they're reaping the fruit of that past proper effort, proper exercise of free will. And the other one is reaping the fruit of misuse of free will. So it's more of a handicap, but it's not the person that's handicapped can't move. They have to work with what they have. And if it takes longer, take longer. They're taking the responsibility for their free will choices. They can get an exemption and move in the fast lane. But it's not a race who's going to cross the finish line first. It's moving in the path to Krishna according to how our past deeds and Krishna's mercy and our sincere efforts and mercy of merciful souls and all those things. Something else? He's deferring to you.
Maharaj, thought, the capacity for thought exists before sound. And
the capacity for thought exists before thought.
And as a conditioned soul, I carry some preconceptions and thoughts are there.
Guaranteed.
And based on that, my actions proceed forward.
Yep.
And at the same time, there is the transcendental sound that I can hear and correct my conceptions.
The potential is there, yes.
But the struggle is there to apply that what I am hearing.
Yeah, because you... Yes, sure. Because we don't want to let go of the other ones.
So, given that situation, how can I move forward towards Krishna?
You continue hearing. And you continue as your ability permits and as your will to do so permits, you apply. It's gradual. Receiving, letting go. Letting go, receiving. Again, just keep moving. Gradual process. Just make sure that you're heading towards the light, that you're properly guided. Yes?
It's like being in Vaikuntha, thinking about Krishna, being in Vaikuntha even during stressful situations, like how can we practically practice that? I can think about some good memories.
Not just think of good memories. Think of Krishna. Not just think happy thoughts. That's possible, just think happy thoughts. And the happy thoughts, because the modes of nature compete, the happy thoughts will be crowded out by unhappy thoughts. And then there'll be happy thoughts. It's just an endless Ferris wheel. So, in short language, knowledge and detachment help, but it's not the final. The final is thinking of Krishna. So with knowledge, supposing I'm having an unhappy thought, supposing I'm at work and people are being, the usual, nasty, competing, speaking awful things, and then, so I want to be in Vaikuntha. How you chanted your japa that morning is going to help determine how the day goes. You've had that experience? So it's not just I'll be less prone to be infected by that toxic stuff out there. That's part of it. The more spiritually strong you are, the less you'll be influenced by the toxic atmosphere around you. But even more so, that awakened state of spiritual consciousness can affect the configuration of matter around you. Imagine Srila Prabhupada was in your workstation. I don't know if he would go there, but supposing he was there, because there was a time when he was grihastha. Was he, just by his presence in some situation, was it affecting the hearts and of people and the minds of people and the behaviors of people? Now, some persons were less affected, more hard-hearted, and more toxic. So, it's what you do in your the primary activities of sadhana bhakti will gradually, over time, bring you to the point where your attachment to Krishna is such that as things are happening around you, you see them as manifestation of the... You see things as Krishna sees them, manifestation of the modes of nature, moving people's minds and moving their mouths and moving their bodies and the modes of nature acting on prakriti. And the soul is just being carried by the machine. Oh, there's an interesting mode of passion exhibition. That was pretty interesting. Here comes an ignorance one. Okay. And you're not identifying with it. You're doing your service to Krishna. That's a gradual maturing stage that will... It's the... the privilege of those who are Krishna conscious moving in this world. You can be less infected and carry some spiritual influence just by the Krishna consciousness that you're carrying within you. So the first business is not to change that, the first business is to change this. Become pure. Something else? You have something? No? Yes?
You were explaining the soul can move the matter and the spirit can move the matter.
Right, what, yeah, matter doesn't move without the touch of spirit.
Okay. This touch of spirit is not the one. So I was thinking the activities that I perform are because of the most of material nature, at least the influence, and the picking up the glasses, that is sanction, it's the act of demiurge.
Can you be real clear with what you're asking, because it's not clear? There, certainly the demigods have a role.
Okay.
And certainly Krishna has a role. Certainly we have a role, and Prakriti has a role. So what's your question?
My question is, I feel my role is this because of my conceptions.
Yeah.
But that may not be.
That's right. But, in the world of illusion, it is. So now, what's your question?
The question is how do I know my role?
You're serving Krishna.
So
let the other ones, I was carrying this conception, carrying that conception, carrying so many conceptions. Now let me cultivate this one under the authority of Scripture. And just rather than than going too quickly to, serve Krishna in which way? Just get it down that you're a servant of Krishna. And then Krishna will give the intelligence how to serve him best. Because you'll be more in touch with what Scripture says and in touch with Super Soul dictating, here's a circumstance of service, serve this way. But you'll miss the Krishna channel if you're not thinking, my position, my role is to serve Krishna in the workplace or in the home or wherever I am. I'm a servant. I'm happy. I don't need some other notion. I'm happy being a servant. And serving and serving and serving and serving and serving and serving, and that's who I am. I'm serving and serving. I'm a servant. I'm a happy servant. Now, Krishna, how would you like me to serve? But make sure you have the, because the other is, if that's not clear, it becomes controlling and manipulating, and arranging it so that my happiness is, because that's what's important. My happiness. Just ask me. That's what's important. Okay. Yes.
So mind influences the matter, that example that you have given. If I know that I don't have a capacity to do something,
why would I do anything? Why would I even do anything?
But,
go ahead.
But because my superiors told me that I have to do that, internally I feel that, I don't have a capacity, but let me try kind of thing.
Yeah.
So how will that actually is influencing? I don't have a capacity, so it's just the mercy that's...
Yeah, your servant. Start with that one. Okay, here comes an instruction, and I'm a servant. So what do I do? I don't feel I have the capacity, but here comes the instruction. One becomes empowered. An important part of being empowered, aside from the instruction itself, is faith in the instructor. In the Your Ever Well Wisher video, or film, a scene I like is one professor speaking about meeting the followers of Prabhupada before they met Prabhupada. And they would speak about things that they were going to do that they didn't have any capacity to do. He didn't mention Satsrup Maharaj by name, but he said one of them told me that he was going to start a magazine. And I asked him, have you ever published a magazine before? He said, no. He said, he's read one, but he doesn't, you know, to publish a magazine is very involved. But he was fully confident he could publish a magazine. And I was wondering, what's going on? And then when I went to New York and I met the Swamiji, then I could understand, oh, this is what's going on. They had such faith that whatever Prabhupada said, it was doable. He was asking us to do all kinds of things that way beyond our capacity. But because he said to do it, it was doable. We did it. You know, with mistakes and imperfectly performed and so on, but with devotion. The paintings, and one example is the paintings of the artists. Look at some of the early paintings. They're really crude. But then over time, those persons that had never painted before, because Prabhupada told them to paint, they're award-winning artists. Before they had never painted, never held a brush in their hand. How? Prabhupada said, do it. That's how. Just practice. So with the instruction, there's empowerment, and with faith in where the instruction is coming from, there's further empowerment. Yes?
This is not related to the thing you taught. I have a doubt in my...
You have a doubt. Good.
So, I've been experiencing so many different ways of yoga and then like meeting enlightened people. I feel that, like, you know, there is something that I really want, that I should have to stick on to something, and then I should really practice in my life.
Good.
And each and every area I can feel it, and then I meet that person, I can be able to feel the energy from the person. But something is blocking me. I really don't understand, like, it's almost like for a small kid, like, even offer two different sweets, and the child likes both of them. But certain point, I should have only one. So I'm in a situation where, like,
good example. Go ahead.
So I need a clarity. I know something is blocking me. I need some help now.
Okay.
To choose one and then stick on to one, because I have my lifespan is very small, and I cannot waste to achieve the Vaikuntha or whatever the mukti we are talking about.
Okay. There are different types of blocks, but the cause of all blocks, the cause of all causes, that which brings the living entity to the material world to begin with, that's the principal block. And that's the one that where attention should go, not the little ones, where the Raga Tvesha Samutena Dvandva Mohina Bharata. And Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, all living entities take birth in this material world mohina and become bewildered by these two forces of duality, desire and hate, raga, dvesha. That raga and dvesha, the original raga and dvesha is towards the personality of Godhead, our Father, our original eternal Father, not mom and dad, the original eternal Father. That's brought us to this material world. We have to fix that. That's the issue. It's not just a matter of choosing this one, that one, because life is made up of this one, that one choices. Whereas in ninth grade English class, I remember reading Robert Frost, "Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, sorry I could not travel both." Life is filled with making choices between this and that. The essence is not whether you go down this one or that one. The essence is, why am I in this circumstance? Let me fix that. The block, the obstacle, is our adversity to the personality of Godhead. That's the problem. Supposing you went down this path or that path, if that's not addressed, you're in the same situation, according to the Bhagavad Gita. You're still in the material world looking for spirituality. Exactly as it said in this purport, that searching for God by speculative method is a guarantee one will never find God. It's like looking for the sunlight with a flashlight. Looking for the sun with a flashlight. It's not how you find the sun. The sun doesn't need a flashlight. The speculative capacity is not required. What's required? Opurusheya, knowledge coming from a perfect person in a line of spiritual teaching. That's required. Okay, so if your sincere desire is the most important ingredient. I'm not doubting it. I'm just making a statement. There's a biblical saying, seek and ye shall find. That sincere desire will Krishna will send the signals that will make turn left or turn right very clear. My recommendation to you is don't be obsessed with turn left or turn right. Make your attention primarily go instead to the primordial, the original boo-boo that we made. We turned our attention away from God. We have an eternal relationship with the personality of Godhead. And we turned our back. Now we're trying to find our way again. Make sure that issue that you have with God is addressed. The relationship with the personality of Godhead is addressed in your heart. That the process of bhakti is specifically for that purpose. Specifically for that purpose. Everything is for that purpose. to restore the proper relationship with personality of Godhead. Now, if that doesn't resonate with you, then you'll do something else and continue making other choices. And those other choices aren't going to resolve the issue. The problem will still be there, whatever path you go. Resolve that issue. The personality of Godhead is inviting you to come to Him. And you've got a doubt and you're struggling. turn your attention to Him. Yeah. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhya. You're familiar with this verse from Bhagavad Gita? There's one verse in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says twice. And that's the verse. Manmana. Think of me. Bhava mad bhakto. Become my devotee. Madhyaji. Worship me. Mam namaskuru. Offer your obeisances unto me. And by so doing, surely you will come to me. It's simple. The heart makes it either hard or simple, but the process is simple. So that's why I'm suggesting address the condition of heart. My attitude towards the personality of Godhead, towards my Father, the Eternal Father. We left. And we're struggling. We belong home with our Eternal Father. That issue between yourself and the Eternal Father be resolved. Otherwise it doesn't matter, so many paths. That's the issue. That's the softness of heart, the condition of heart that's required. Okay, I'm going to end there. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Srila Prabhupada Maharaj.
Jai.